You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and I am in Republican Leader of the House, Jim Durkin's office. Is that the correct way of stating your title?
I am the House Republican Leader.
Okay.
I live in the west suburbs of Cook County. I'm Republican. How about that? Republican leader lives in Cook County. So, but I hope you like my office.
Your office is stunning. You were telling me that
there's a lot of history here. This used to be Mike Madigan's office up until 1995. Mm-hmm. Republicans back then, there was the Bill Clinton, the anti-Bill Clinton wave. So Republicans won everything. It was Lee Daniels' office. It was the Speaker back in 95 and 96. And I'm told that many, many years ago, this used to be the Secretary of State office.
Really?
But, you know, here's the beauty of it.
It's gorgeous.
It's great. I come from a family that I have three stepdaughters, and I have a little girl, my wife, and we have a dog whose name is Ruby, not Rudy.
Okay.
And I've had to share a bathroom my whole life. I'm one of eight boys also.
Yeah.
And we shared one bathroom. So I have my own shower, bathroom, and a kitchen.
You love it in here, don't you?
I love it. It's great. It's a wonderful office. There's a lot of history, and I'm very blessed and honored to be in this position because, you know, I don't look at this as a lifetime calling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do the best I can, but, you know, somebody else will be in here someday.
So this is the Leader Cave.
This is Leader Cave, yeah. Exactly.
This is great.
It's good. It's a great place. My office is open to everybody, and you can ask any Democrat. I have them back here talking to me about their bills, helping them with their bills. And I pretty much negotiated the Chicago firearm legislation with four Democrats in my office at the end of May.
Really?
I have Democrats come here. Republicans, I keep an open-door policy.
Well, that's what I've heard. I've heard that a lot of Democrats like working with you, and obviously the Republicans have a lot of respect for you. But that things have changed, obviously, over the last 2 years,
yes,
as far as the tone.
Yes.
But first I want to ask, you said you're from the western suburbs.
Yep.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Westchester, Illinois.
Westchester?
Right on the border. It's right on the DuPage-Cook County border. But my parents moved out of the west side of Chicago when I was like a year old.
Okay.
1962. Both of them passed just within the last 4 years.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
But we were very fortunate. You know, they're both 84 years old.
Okay.
And we had a wonderful life with them. They, incredible parents, and my brothers were the beneficiaries of incredible sacrifice from my parents. All eight of us went to the same Catholic grammar school in Westchester. We all went to Fenwick High School in Oak Park.
Oh, really? It's a great school.
All eight of us graduated from college.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Illinois State University.
All right.
And then five out of the eight are practicing lawyers in the city of Chicago. And my parents always said, education, education, education. They helped us so much along the way. So
great.
I wish they were here to see. I have a brother who's in the federal court. I've got brothers that are doing really well in the legal profession.
All boys, you said?
All boys, no girls.
Wow.
So I told you I'm now in a house of all women. And I
yes.
make sure that there's my wife and our little dog called
Ruby.
Not,
yes.
No, with a B, not a D. You know, it's. I jokingly say this, but I think there's something to it. But when people say, well, how is it to deal with those Democrats down in Springfield and, you know, the Speaker and all mm-hmm. those guys? I said, guys, you haven't seen anything. I went from a household of eight boys and no girls to a household of five women and one female dog. I am just, you know, I've seen it all. Nothing.
But it was
nothing,
incremental.
Nothing can surprise me.
But it was incremental for you, though. First, you have, you know, your wife.
Yeah.
You get to know her. And
yeah.
then the kids, I guess.
And then, you know, girls when they're teenagers are so pleasant, too.
I'm sure that my parents had some stories. I know my mom wanted to have me institutionalized. That's a different story for another day.
Exactly. But you know what? They're all doing well. And
how old are the kids?
My oldest stepdaughter is 26. She just got married a couple weeks ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And 24, 22, and my little girl is 15.
Oh, wow.
She's starting her second year of high school.
And what does she think about Dad being in Springfield?
She's known Dad. As long as she's known Dad, Dad's been going back and forth in Springfield. So
wow.
It's just, you know, she just, it's tough. And, you know, the girls are kind of grown up. And so it's my wife and my daughter at home. I think that they know that at some point I'm going to finish this job. But the thing is, all those years, I've missed things. And it's unfortunate.
Right.
But I feel that this is very important for her and also for her generation to accomplish things that are not going to be left with them. Problems
Absolutely.
That will not be left. And that's, I use the phrase, my parents often said this to me, that never felt more true today, is leave a place better than you found it. And, you know, and I think about that. My parents wouldn't do this. We wouldn't leave this debt. We wouldn't leave these problems for us. They never did. They made the sacrifice.
Right.
And they sacrificed so much for themselves. But the fact is, we need to have that same attitude over the next 10 days.
Exactly. I think that a lot of people are hoping for that. Is the philosophy of your parents, as you just said, leave something better than when you found it? Is that part of what drew you to politics, to run for office? Is seeing something that you could make better?
I think so. You know, it's interesting. This is how it started. My brothers, I come from a family, a lot of them are really labor Democrats. And I remember working, a little kid, passing out stuff to my older brother in the city of Chicago for the Chicago elections. And I just did it for the fun.
Right.
I decided that there were some things that happened that I witnessed. One thing that really disturbed me was the Iran-Contra hostage crisis, and I was just very disturbed that Americans were being held in this third world nation.
Right.
And we couldn't do anything about it, and I was very disappointed with Jimmy Carter. And it scared me. I was a young man, and I looked at the Reagan.
Mm-hmm. The promise of Reagan.
He made me feel good about things, and I just started thinking differently.
Okay.
I'm the black sheep of the family, of course, the Republican. But I became involved with local politics. I was involved with some local township races, and I helped a friend get elected as a township committeeman. He then ran for state representative in 1992, and he was elected, and he was about my age. And I got the bug. I started getting excited. So I decided to run for a junior college board, Triton College Board of Trustees, back in the early 1990s. And there was problems with the college. It was called Cloud College.
Oh, really?
Yeah, federal investigations, all this stuff. But what really put me over the edge was I was single. I was an assistant Cook County State's attorney.
Uh-huh.
Loved it. But the thing is, I felt I could do more.
Okay.
Even though I spent long days at 26 in California. You know,
that
crazy place.
It's intense.
So the Triton College Board of Trustees had awarded themselves American Express gold cards. This is the early 1990s.
Right.
Talk about the arrogance. Arrogance. Unbridled.
Uh-huh.
So the management, so I decided, I'm going to run. This will be what I'm going to run on. It's going to be on this fiscal note, but more importantly, I'm going to get rid of the credit cards. I will get rid of the American Express credit cards. The gold cards. Not even just Americans, but the American Express gold cards.
Sure.
I was elected. I got sworn in the first day, the night in which I was sworn in, the first order of business, got rid of the American Express gold cards. So the light bulb went out in my head that, you know what?
Done.
Instead of a person who's just going to complain and not do anything about it, I decided to run for office, and I saw that, you know what? I had an idea, something I felt strong about, and I was able to execute upon it.
Yeah.
I got elected, so I just got more and more engaged.
It builds confidence.
It does, and I'm like, you know what, this is...
Little
by little, but the fact is, I was a lucky guy. I got appointed to the House of Representatives in 1995.
Okay, so somebody was stepping down, or
no? The state rep who I helped get elected, his name's Tom Walsh. He became the state senator by appointment because Judy Bartopinka was a state senator.
Okay,
and she ran and became the treasurer of Illinois,
sure.
Which created an opening. So he got appointed to the Senate seat, and then he appointed me to his seat.
Okay,
in the House. So I served for three terms, and I did a lot of interesting stuff during that time. 2002, I ran for the U.S. Senate in a very forgettable year.
2002.
I won the primary, though. I beat Jim Oberweis's first race for public office, and a guy named John Cox, who was both millionaires, and I'm anything but a millionaire. But I won the primary, ran against Dick Durbin. Got slaughtered. I left. I just practiced law, but I came back in 2006 and became even more involved. I was was the ranking member on the impeachment committee with Rob Goyvich, and I tried the first time ever the removal of a sitting state representative, Derek Smith, from the west side of Chicago, who was picked up in an FBI sting. So I felt that I had just, you know, elevated my status a little bit.
Well, and having worked in the state attorney's office probably, you know, gives you that, you
edge.
Know, the edge. Yeah.
A little bit.
I
understand the process. I know how to ask the question. I know.
Yeah.
So, but it was a great learning experience working for the Cook County State Attorney's Office. Your cases are won and lost, and you hope that you can, most importantly, it's not about convictions. I always looked at it as about finding the truth.
Right.
That's what our system's about. And if you can find the truth, then you can also bring closure to victims who've suffered terrible loss. To me, that's one of the most gratifying things I've ever done in my life. So, but I look at what's going on right now in Springfield as that same challenge.
Yeah, and people really do want closure.
They do.
There's no doubt about it.
We all need closure. We need closure in a fair, negotiated fashion.
Well, and that's what's so hard for everybody is that it doesn't seem fair, right? A lot of people voted for Governor Rauner because they felt like things hadn't been played fairly for a long time. They feel like Speaker Madigan has a lot of power. And having been here from 1995 to 2002, is that right?
That's correct.
And then
coming back in 2006, yes.
Right, sort of. And sometimes it perhaps taking that time, did that give you some perspective going back to work and getting your, you know, rolling up your sleeves and legal work? sort of bring a different sort of perspective.
Well, I, after a loss in 2002, like every other person who's lost a race, I'm never getting back in it again. Oh, I hate everybody.
Yeah, how'd they bring you back?
You know what? I got the itch.
Sure.
I did, because there was an opening in my neighborhood, and I was appointed twice to the House of Representatives. Uh-huh. I mean, I'm very lucky. I'm a very lucky guy.
And then you've won your elections since.
I've only lost one election in my life.
And that was against
Senator
Dick Durbin.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? And he and I have become pretty good friends after that. That's what I look at. You, I don't want to make enemies. I think that there's a day out after this that you want to make sure that you develop goodwill. And Senator Durbin and I, it wasn't a negative campaign. He always told me that, and that's what he appreciated. But I also joked to him. I said I didn't have the money to go negative. So, but
well,
he and I, we've had great conversations, and we've had beers, and we've had lunch together afterwards. So,
well, even though you didn't achieve or have not yet achieved a federal office, I think that, this is an important moment in Illinois history.
This is
something where we're on the brink of, we've never experienced this. No state in the country has ever experienced this. We also have a speaker who has been in office, I think it's in July, he'll be the longest standing speaker in the history of the United States.
Yes.
And has he been the speaker the entire time, both from 1995 to 2002?
1995, he was defeated. He was dethroned as speaker. And a representative by the name of Lee Daniels from Elmhurst became the speaker for a two-year period. He was the minority leader for a number of years before. But they lost the majority after that next election.
Okay. So for 2 years, there was no...
Yeah.
But other than that, he has been the speaker.
That's correct.
What can you tell people about what this process has been like? Because we talk a lot about what's been done before. If only they'd done this, if they had paid the pension differently, if we hadn't dipped in, if we had, did a lot of things. Is there something you could, because I go crazy when I think about if we coulda, woulda, shoulda, coulda, but here we are.
Chicago took away their line item, property tax levy for their Chicago pensions. Mm-hmm. Years ago. They wanted to take it. They wanted to eliminate it. The systems were in a great place. They were in a great place. They would continue to be in a better position if they would not have removed that the taxing authority that they had on their taxing bills to provide for their pensions. And now, like every other pension system in Illinois, they're in deep trouble.
Right.
But Chicago didn't need to do that. It's one thing they shouldn't have done.
What was your reasoning for that?
I wasn't there. I don't know what happened. I don't know why.
So what was, there was a line item?
It was a property tax line item to fund Chicago pensions.
Okay.
And I think it was just more, I think they just wanted to have a little more flexibility in the money that they bring in through property taxes. But, they made a mistake, and it was years ago. They shouldn't have done that. And that's put the Chicago Teachers Union pension and all these other pension systems in a very, very precarious situation. So I was not here for, I was gone for the early Blagojevich years, but the fact is they took pension holidays in Illinois.
Right.
And they brought in five systems. And what they did is the money which should have been directed towards the pensions, they put it into the budget, general revenue fund, and they claimed, well, we didn't raise taxes, we were able to pass a budget. What you did is that you shortchanged these pension systems, which placed an actuarial disaster on them. And that's why we're in these, again, for a variety of reasons. And it's not these small, pension pickups for people, but it's been the either shortchanging or just not paying into the pension system based on changing the law and saying that we're going to create a pension holiday has had a very, very destructive effect upon these state systems. And we're trying to fix our pensions right now, and you can't even, we're trying to help people. They don't want to make any changes. I get it. They don't want to change. They don't want any changes in the benefit structure. But the fact is these systems are going to, at some point, are not going to be able to pay out benefits.
No.
I can't ask the great majority of Illinoisans who are not part of a defined contribution system, who all, if they have 401ks, to pick up these pensions.
And the pensions we're talking about, those are firefighters, police officers, teachers?
Well, in Chicago, but within Illinois, it's the state employees, state universities, state employees for the state universities, state employees that are working here in the Capitol across the street, the Secretaries of State's office. It's the, obviously, Chicago Teachers Pension Fund.
In addition, to the Chicago Fire Department, Chicago Police Department is kind of a...
It's different. They're not in our pension bill, Chicago Teachers.
Okay.
General Assembly Retirement System, Teachers Retirement System, all teachers outside of Chicago.
Okay.
And judicial pension system. So those systems, all of them are in bad shape.
They're in bad shape because because of the not paying the...
That's part of it, absolutely. Yeah. And I think the benefits that were created many years ago are no longer... They're extremely expensive. We have a 3% compounded cost of living adjustment for all these systems, which was great when you can afford it, but we can't afford it right now. People are living a lot longer than what people had anticipated 20, 30 years ago. And, you know, maybe we should have the pharmaceutical companies who give the people the cholesterol pills ought to be paying the difference. But, you know, I all joking aside, the systems cannot... It's unsustainable based on the current benefit structure, and no one wants to make any changes in the benefit structure. And I understand that, but the fact is, I want to save the pensions for these men and women who are going to rely upon them. I want to make sure that they have a defined benefit. Defined benefits are relics. No one has it in the private sector. They're going away.
Right.
But we're still keeping them, and they're tax-free also. You don't pay state taxes on public pensions.
Right, and they also don't get Social Security either. Is that correct?
Some don't. I think teachers are the ones who do not get Social Security. Why they don't get it, I don't know. But I think that was a decision made many, many years ago by the unions to keep the teachers from getting Social Security. If they're able to, I think, if they can get their Social Security back, I think it's great. But the fact is, it's not our call that somebody in Washington has to do that.
Right. Yeah. And when you say that you mentioned something about compounded cost of living.
3%. Not straight, 3%, so it's 3% over the previous year's increase.
And when was that passed?
In the 1980s.
1980s?
Somewhere in the 80s, yeah.
And so that's something that is not changeable.
I think it's a vested benefit by the Supreme Court.
Oh, so now it's part of the Constitution?
No, it's not the Constitution, but I think it's part of a contract that people entered into when they started working for a state system or for more of a state agency in which... Courts have stated that once you start that benefit package that you start with, you can't change it.
Okay.
So everybody's got a different.
So it's got to be with the contract has to be changed. Well, but they can't change that either.
No.
No.
No. No. It's a deprivation of benefits.
Okay.
So everybody's got a different opinion. I think we have to go back and make changes. Mm-hmm. I've introduced bills to do that. Because we're right now sitting on top of over $100 billion of unfunded liability within these systems.
Wow.
You know, and they can be fixed over time. But you have to make tough decisions on it. And we just can't say that we're going to raise taxes to pay for our pensions. I'm not going to let the over 90% of the Illinoisans who don't have this benefit should be the ones underwriting it. We can fix it internally, ensuring that the systems will make sure that they can pay their benefits, but also ensuring that they will have a defined benefit program, which is something, as I said, it's very rare.
When you say defined benefits, so how much does it change because you can't, you just mentioned with the contracts, it's vested. We're not talking about affecting the benefits that are already promised to them. You're talking about going forward with new employees, or?
We can make, but we also, we're looking at a concept that has been passed by the Senate, Senator Cullerton, which would allow for what we call a consideration argument, meaning that you can modify a contract if you have consideration which is extended to the other party. It's an old common law type of argument which we believe should go back and get tested before the courts.
Okay.
But there's a second part of it which we can have we believe will pose no constitutional questions on that, providing monetary savings, which I can get way into the weeds. I have to get my fact sheet out.
That's okay. No, I'm not going to test you.
But we think we will not have to withstand a constitutional worries. Decision makers don't have. So
we are here for the special session that the governor has called.
Yes.
The Senate has passed a budget, including revenue and appropriation, or no? It's revenue and
a budget with revenue. Yeah.
And that was not brought to the House. They didn't call.
We didn't call. The Speaker did not call it for a vote.
Right at the end of the regular
of
session.
Right.
Okay, because they didn't have the votes. Did you get a chance to see? Have you read the Senate's bill, their budget?
I've seen overviews of it.
Okay, and what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think, I think a budget is a spending plan for the state of Illinois, but we've said it also has a tax increase in it. We have been consistent over the past, 3 years that we will work with the Democrats on revenue, which is in taxes, but we think that there are other items that are important for us bringing Illinois in a better place.
Okay.
And meaning property tax relief.
Right.
Property tax freeze.
That, no, property tax relief and property tax freeze are two different things.
Right. Property tax freeze.
Right.
So, and that's relief.
It is.
You can look at it. I look at it as relief, but it's a freeze over a four-year period.
Right.
We think that's important if we're going to have a temporary tax increase. And that's what we stated that we would support over a four-year period. We need to be able to provide relief for people who are
owners of property.
And like, I live in the West Suburbs. I just got reassessed. And holy cow, I got really reassessed.
Yeah, we have the highest in the country.
It is. So I don't think it's unreasonable for us to ask that if we're going to be asking men and women to make their annual contribution to the Department of Revenue every April, that they need to see a little better return off their investment, meaning let's try to balance it out. We have to pay some bills, but I think that workman's compensation reform, I believe it's important. It is a government issue because the state of Illinois pays hundreds of millions of dollars in work comp benefits. Local governments, including the city of Chicago, pay close to $500 million a year in work comp benefits. They desperately want work comp reform. So when someone says, I think the speaker said that, that's a non-budget issue. I'm sorry, it is a budget issue.
Because there are millions of dollars.
Because it's costing the state so much money to pay out these benefits and also local governments as well. So you can't say it's a non-budget issue.
So what would be some of the reform that you guys have introduced?
We pension reform.
Right, but, yeah. but in particular to workers'
comp. Workman's compensation reform.
Is part of it?
Yes, absolutely. We also have property tax, freeze, relief. Those are important.
Let me ask you about property tax. Is there is there much more of a burden on property taxes? The reason they're so high is in part because we have this flat tax. And I know that that's not something that we can even begin to chip away at right now, considering where we are. But, you know, when that was introduced in the Constitutional Convention in 1970, the difference between where the very rich were and the working class was much closer than it is now. Illinois has lost so much in manufacturing and textiles, a lot of other industry that's gone away, and the rich continue to kind of, the gap has spread.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is that part of why we have such a burden is we haven't modernized our tax system in Illinois?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I don't. I do know that if you are going to restructure and have a graduated tax, what will happen is that the high earners will leave the state. But what that also affects is the subchapter S of small businessmen and women. It squeezes them terribly.
I haven't done enough of the research on other states where they have the graduated taxes. I mean, it seems like, I believe there's only four states in the country that have a flat tax.
I mean, if people think they're undertaxed in Illinois, I'm not sure where they're getting it.
No, not undertaxed.
No.
But, I mean, one of the temporary tax that expired the year Governor Rauner came in was at 5%, which was
correct.
Which is 75% more than it is now. Where are we at, 3.25? Or 3.75?
3.75, yes.
I'm just curious as to, you know, how much, because that was a pretty big shortfall when that expired.
Yeah, it was.
That compounded a lot of what we're going through right now.
I think that it's a lot of factors that would have brought us to this problem.
Absolutely.
Had. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So what are the chances? I mean, I don't even want to ask what are the chances, because that sounds like we're gambling, and this isn't something we should be gambling on. But what is it going to take?
It's going to take... I'm open to negotiating a deal, a resolution, but the thing is, I'm not going to just say that we're going to vote on a budget and a tax increase.
Right.
I've said it since the beginning of the year.
It has to include workers' comp, pension reform.
Reforms that are important for the state of Illinois, helping our business community. I support the Illinois worker, but I support the Illinois employer as well. Oh my gosh, they're the ones that put the middle class to work. So to say that we're not going to give them relief on their biggest headache, which is their work comp premiums, to me, doesn't solve the problems that we currently are experiencing. I've talked with the little guy, the little employer, all the way up to the John Deere's and the Caterpillar CEOs. Mm-hmm. And what's the first thing that comes out of your mouth? Work comp, work comp, work comp.
And that's how much they're paying
for
the insurance?
Yes, and paying out the benefits too.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I mean, and they said that one of the reasons that this came from the previous CEO of Caterpillar, said, I'm not opening up another line of manufacturing in Illinois because of the comp rates. So I go to Indiana, I go to Texas. And, you know, those are jobs that we could have otherwise have. Good paying, you know, blue-collar jobs in some part of the state of Illinois is lost out because a major manufacturer said that I can't compete. I'm going somewhere where the costs are going to be more reasonable for me to be able to put together this operation.
So these are things as far as how we've structured the pension, workers' comp. These are things that have accumulated over the years.
Over the years. The pensions has just been a disaster. And the thing is, we can't let it continue to be the one of the major costs within state government, our pension payments are ballooning every year.
Yeah.
And that means it's less money that's going towards education, human services, pensions, work comp, and property tax relief. We think that those are the most important things that need to be part of the final of the solution and the answer and a way to get past this budget impasse. So
without those, you don't want to move on unless those are a part of.
No, we've been saying that for 2 years.
I know.
And
you know,
we've had working groups that have been working for 2 years in which we thought we had deals, and all of a sudden they meaning the Democrats, walked away every time the last 2 years.
Has there been any indication that people have come closer on any of those elements, whether it's
we'll find out. But I introduced a bunch of bills last week that reflect that.
Okay.
We felt that we're consistent with where the Senate was at up until the middle of May, mm-hmm. and we hope that. And I've said very publicly that. We're not inflexible, but the fact is we think that what we've introduced, that we can work with them as long as it's conforms or, substantial conformance with what we are trying to accomplish by helping out and reducing the rates on workers' compensation, helping property tax, people who pay property taxes, but also getting our pensions, getting our arms around our pensions. We have to do it. If we don't do it now, I don't know when we're going to get to it.
Right, so it's kind of a now or not at all situation, yeah. It seems like. What happens if you're not able to have something by June 30th?
Well, the state of Illinois will continue to run. Money will still be brought in, but we will not have an appropriation to spend on education.
Mm-hmm.
And, we have a general state aid that's a payment that's due, I think, at the end of July or beginning of August, which we may not be able to make, which would be an absolute tragedy. And that's not only for the city of Chicago, and I'm not sure if they, even though they claim that, I'm not sure if they can open up their schools on time.
Right.
They're borrowing a lot, and I think
the mayor is borrowing, right.
Yeah. But the state of Illinois will run because there are things called continuing appropriations, which are required by law to be paid even without a budget. We have court orders on state employee pay, and consent decrees from the federal courthouse that we have to pay out on a lot of human service programs. Consent decrees of some go back almost 20, 30 years,
mm-hmm.
that have not been dissolved. So people are coming in and saying that our agency provides this service, and there's a consent decree that went back 10 years ago that falls within the protected area of people that this consent decree from years ago meant to protect. So, and you have a lot of them over in federal court, and that's swallowing up a lot of money too. But what's being left on the wayside, you have just basic state programs, education, from K through 12, but also higher ed,
right.
Are not operating with an appropriation. So there's a lot of things that can go things will get a lot worse.
Right.
And I don't want that to happen. No one wants it to happen. But the fact is, it's a two-way street. You have to work with us. I'll respect the priorities of the Democrats as long as they respect our priorities. I've said that in January when I got sworn in, that we will work with the Democrats on every issue. But, they don't have the supermajority.
Mm-hmm.
They need our votes right now. It's after May 31st.
Right, nothing gets done without compromise.
Without Republican participation. And I'm willing to do that, but the fact is, don't disregard our votes and also what we believe in.
So this is this does come down to a battle of values.
Yes.
Do you see that?
Values, and you know what? And it can get accomplished. I respect what their values are. And you can ask anybody in the Capitol. I've worked and helped Democrats pass so many bills that really don't apply to the West Suburbs where I live, but I work with the House Democrats on so many issues. So I understand their values, and I'll continue to work with them on their values, but we feel core principles are important for us to be able to have to be part of the budget solution that we're not going to give up on.
Speaker Madigan, when I interviewed him, said that he is holding the line. Thank you. He's holding the line at where he is because he sees the governor's agenda as being extreme right.
I disagree, and that's unfortunate. It's not true. To say that we need to fix our pension systems is not right. It's fiscally conservative, and it's morally responsible to fix our workers' compensation systems that are not so tilted against the employer. It's not fair in a no-fault system, but giving property tax owners who have the highest property taxes, if not in the Midwest of the United States, a four-year freeze or relief.
Right.
Is not radical. I don't know anybody else who would consider those as radical, right-wing, agenda items.
But now these are things that are. It's all of it, right? So now there's the property tax freeze. I mean, these are things that were negotiable on either side. This is what we want in order to get a budget passed.
They want the Democrats said they would, yeah.
But they wouldn't. Were there anywhere along the way in the last 2 years where small victories could have been accomplished? Was there ever any wiggle room that we could have avoided being $15 billion behind?
I will say that the attitude in the Senate is a little different than the House. The President of the Senate, John Cullerton, and the Senate Leader, Redonio, have a very good relationship. They talk a lot, and I give them great credit for moving forward to try to get something done this past session. We don't have that same luxury in the House.
Right.
The Speaker is
a little mysterious.
Mysterious.
Is that how you like to put it?
I'll leave that to you.
Oh, certainly. What would you like? And I know that you've got a lot of work to do. And if you don't mind, I'd love to be. I'm only here for the first day and the last day because I couldn't. I don't know if I can do this for 10 days with you guys.
Come back. That'd be great.
Love to wrap up with you next Friday if you guys are still here.
Sure.
Would you still be here next Friday, regardless? I mean, I'm guessing if something gets done before then, cool. You won't be here on Friday. But do you have to be here if nothing gets done?
I'll be here next Friday. If we have nothing, if let's say that if a budget's passed and that is responsible,
you might go home. Yeah.
But if it's a half-baked budget or if it's a stopgap budget, then we'll be leaving.
Right. And that's something, as the governor, he said that, that a bad budget is not better than no budget at all.
We have a point to make it right. Mm-hmm. We've been kind of hobbling along for the past couple of years. Have to get it done now. I don't believe in waiting. We'll revisit it next year.
Right. No.
No,
well, anyone feels that
than,
way.
No time is better than now.
Right.
So let's do it. We've got people here. They need our votes. We want to give them votes, but we have to be responsible. We're going to be responsible. We're not going to let our votes be taken for granted. They need to know that we represent just as many people in our districts as they do. Mm-hmm. So treat us with respect and don't disregard our priorities and we can get this done.
Is this now a game of chicken? Is this who's going to flinch first? I'm between Governor Rauner and Speaker Madigan. That's what it seems like to a lot of people.
Governor Rauner said last week that this is what he can support, and he would support the tax increase, too. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else he needs to do.
This is the last question. Is there anything people in the
White
state...
White Sox. Like,
White Sox?
Yeah.
Well, then we're definitely done. You mentioned all that the state will continue to run regardless. You know,
correct.
Things will get bills will get paid.
Will accrue though.
They'll accrue as well.
Some bills will be paid, but you
know, there are some social service providers in particular. I know the people with PACT. I know that there are some independent.
Many of them. They're in my office all the time.
Yeah.
It's very
Steve Boise is having a tough time making sure, like, being able to know how to staff if he's going to be able to provide to people who need it the most in the community. There are people who are suffering. There are people who are dying across the state of Illinois. But I think that not everyone's feeling it. And it is because the state continues to carry on business. You know, that number grows bigger. It's almost like insurmountable at $15 billion. What's the number going to be when this is over?
We can
maybe
get there. There's a way to get there. You know.
Can the people of Illinois do anything, though? Is there any, I mean, should they be calling or should they just...
Yes, call.
Right? Call, right?
Call and say, look, the Republicans are willing to deal.
Mm-hmm.
And... I'm just saying that the Democrats who are out there tell their Democratic representatives and senators that, you know, you compromise. That's what you do when you have a conflict. You find common ground. That's all.
All right.
Nothing more than that.
Call your legislators.
I want the state to be the same state that I grew up in. Back in the 60s, where I had great opportunities, and the state that I love and the state that I remain in.
Okay.
Leave it in a better place than you found.
There you go. We will leave it at that.
Okay.
I hope that you are able to accomplish what you seek.
Thank you, Patty.
Thank
it's a real
sir.
Pleasure. We'll do more of this. Okay.
Oh, yeah, please. This is Patty Vasquez. Pretty late with we've been hanging out with Republican Leader of the House, Jim Durkin. I didn't say that right again. House Republican Leader.
It's close enough.
Jim Durkin. More for this on 720 WGN.